I'm Stephen Tracy, and this is the Ruling Elder podcast of the Committee on Christian Education of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. This is a podcast designed to assist in the education, training, and encouragement of ruling elders in their work. Ruling elders are one of God's gifts to His church. Today we're going to be discussing how ruling elders can help and encourage deacons in the work of local congregations. I'm delighted to be joined, first of all, by Ruling Elder David Nachla. David is a ruling elder at Calvary OPC, Glenside, Pennsylvania, and he is the administrator of the OPC Committee on Diaconal Ministries. And David, you have a host of other titles that go with that, but we're glad to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks. Great to be here. Love this topic.
We're also pleased today to be joined by Deacon Jeffrey Roach. Jeffrey is a deacon in Resurrection Presbyterian Church in Matthews, North Carolina. He's been a deacon there since 2006. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Well, thanks, Stephen, for having me. Looking forward to the discussion.
Thank you. I think it's going to be a great discussion, particularly because David is such an expert in podcasts. my job will be much easier today. So let's start with a simple question. At least I think it's a simple question. What do you think are the ingredients of a healthy diaconate, a healthy body of elders serving in a local congregation? What would you say are the key ingredients?
Jeffrey, I'm looking to you with all the years of experience as a deacon.
Well, I was looking to my elder here and saying, you first, right? I serve you, which is a good segue right into the discussion. When I am hearing this first question, Stephen, from you, what's the ingredient of a healthy diaconate? I think healthy diaconates are made up of individual deacons who are fervent in worship, right? So think about being humble, being full of the Spirit. You think about in the world of the diaconate, you don't have a lot of time sometimes to formulate and discuss. And I mean, often these are in times of chaos. Being full of the Spirit is one of the prerequisites, having Spirit-led folks. We can drill down into that a little more, but the Spirit is one of the prerequisites. I'll leave it at that. Humble and full of the Spirit.
No, that's really good, Jeffrey. I think that a healthy diaconate is one that's in tune with the congregation and her needs. Deacons are there to serve primarily the congregation, and having them very connected to the individual congregants is super important. And that includes availability. Perceived availability. I think diaconates should be organized and relevant to our topic today, having a healthy relationship with the session is another ingredient of a healthy diaconate.
It's essential to have good and godly spiritual man available, organized. What kind of gifts do you think men who are going to be deacons should have? Of course, not any, like as with ruling elders, not every deacon will have all the gifts, but what kinds of gifts serve congregations well?
The first thing that comes to my mind, sitting on a board of deacons for many, many years, I think a calmness of spirit. Thinking about, we have these phrases about quote unquote flying off the handle or impulsive. I think all of those are descriptions that shouldn't show up. Deliberate or measured, maybe even perhaps slow to speak. Being a good listener, process what's happening, and if you're full with the Spirit, the Spirit just comes back out in your response. But it's so important to have a calmness of spirit, particularly when deacons in so many times find themselves in perhaps emotionally charged situations, thinking of people that might have lost a job, have financial concerns. Those are emotionally charged situations. So having the calmness to bring in to those situations is certainly extremely important.
And, you know, dovetailing off of that, at the same time, you don't want somebody who's passive. I think of those who are compassionate and empathetic. And so as Jeffrey was talking about, meeting with a family or an individual and the nature of the difficulties they're facing, empathizing with those and responding in a compassionate way and in an active way, calmly, but proactively, I think are important aspects of it, of deacons.
So David, you reminded me of a comment that Pastor Trice gave me when I was just coming on as a newly ordained deacon. He gave me the challenge of having understated initiative. Mm. And I love that phrase. It's stuck with me for a long time, obviously. Understated initiative. So perhaps maybe that gets to what both you and I were just talking about, a calmness and a deliberateness of spirit, but also certainly not passive. That was your point, David. Maybe that understated initiative.
It's good
out there.
Meaning that there are points in time in which a deacon just needs to get it done.
That's right.
Yeah. What way do you think that elders then can help in the work of the church, cultivating the work of deacons and helping them to flourish in their work? That's really what we're wanting to talk about today. The Deacons podcast does a great job of setting out all kinds of subjects that deacons talk about. But I'm interested in how do elders help deacons? Have you got some thoughts on that?
Well, I'm really thankful to have Jeffrey on because the church he comes from has had a long history of what I perceive to be a good relationship between the elders and the deacons, and a deliberate to that. I've thought about this from the standpoint that before I served as an elder, I did serve locally as a deacon for 5 years, and it was very interesting to serve in one area of service and then in the other. And I remember as a deacon sometimes being frustrated with the elders, and perceiving that even in our other deacons. Because of poor communication, there were decisions that were made by the elders that it had to do with the diaconal realm. Maybe there were decisions made about the deacon's offering is going to go for such and such, or you know, we as a church are going to minister to this need that was very diaconal in nature. And those decisions, I don't think there was any intentional harm meant, but sometimes those decisions were made without the deacon's involvement. And in a sense, I would say that without meaning to do it, I would say that the elders were undermining the oversight of the ministry of mercy that has been given to deacons. And so that's where, you know, to come back to how can the elders help is to not only have trust and confidence in their deacons, but to maybe even communicate that and encourage the deacons in their oversight of the ministry of mercy. And yeah, communicate effectively in that realm.
Jeffrey, I was going to ask, how does Resurrection Presbyterian Church function? Because David said here, you know, in his view, it's a model of good relationships and deliberateness. So in terms of that kind of communication on the ground in your congregation, what does that look like?
It looks like a session and diaconate that are very close. So, you know, we are the hands and feet of the elders, right? Leading that service for them per Acts chapter 6. And the closer the deacons and elders are, the better off. In essence, we know what our manager wants from us, and we're implementing, thinking about healthy business relationships, right? What you don't want, for example, is, you know, that typical startup firm, right? You got one guy who had the vision to start the firm. He's the CEO and he's everything. And as they grow, he has to learn how to delegate, you know, this to, you know, a chief of staff and this one to this managing director. And that is often very hard for the entrepreneur, you know, person who started this thing. He's not, or she is not willing to let go of some responsibilities. And in essence, it hurts the business. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much you can take to that. And, you know, it hurts the church overall when a session doesn't understand, you know, that entrepreneur business starter problem, letting go of some responsibilities. And it's so important. I think back to your question, Stephen, you're saying how do we do it at Resurrection Presbyterian? We, as a diaconate, hear from the session regularly, as the session also hears from the diaconate regularly. There are members of session always in our deacon meetings. There are deacons at every stated session meeting, but we are in each other's meetings. So we know the desire of the session. What is the will of session? Well, we got a good handle on it because we're close to them. So we can implement that will in the practical ways that we're called to do.
That's very helpful. I wonder how many deacons' boards would view themselves in the terms that you used, were the hands and feet of the session. Like, do you think that's a common view?
I think I'm very privileged as a individual, as a husband, as a father, as a deacon, to be privileged to be in a church that probably doesn't. That's probably not fair across, certainly not across broader meeting. Yesterday, and the pastor emailed out a report from the session to the deacons to let us know what's happening, some of the sessional shepherding questions that relate that ultimately to deacon decisions. And so it's very much a hand in glove relationship. There's a ministry of mercy, there's a ministry of word, and that happens simultaneously. And we got to make sure that we're talking to each other so we know what the right hand and the left hand are doing.
Yeah. And then the principle, of course, that you're drawing from Acts chapter 6.
Yeah.
That elders really have to learn to delegate. And the importance of that is so that it doesn't take them away from their work.
That's right.
The ministry of the word and prayer. So I think that is that the emphasis on elders delegating is a very important one. Do you think elders can sometimes be slow to delegate? It was interesting listening to your thoughts on that, but because they view themselves as the entrepreneurs, I guess. I don't know that's the...
The business owner, you know, the guy who started it has that emotional, we often joke in the business world, right? That you have such emotional connectivity to all the divisions. And you're like, well, wait a second, the CEO can't be involved in every single decision. That's not helpful for the company.
The business model, his business is going to grow by hiring competent people that he trusts to serve in those various areas. And that's, and I mean, the calling of the deacon is high, is a high calling, and the qualifications are high qualifications. And those qualifications are high because the work that they're being entrusted to is caring for the flock. And that division of labor that occurred in Acts 6, if you know, it was so that both the spiritual and the physical care could both continue and neither would be hindered by the other. So there's a lack of trust. You need to think about how do we work through and figure out what that is and how do we grow in those areas so that we can the session can let go of the ministry of mercy because it's in good hands and can continue to focus on the ministry of word and prayer, which is their primary calling.
Yeah. So back to the delegation question, Stephen, you asked as a follow-up. So you think about Acts 6 and you think about the whole line was, it's not right for us to neglect the ministry of the word in order to wait on tables, as it says in that translation. And so the implication was we can't do everything, because if we're doing one thing, there's a high probability that we're neglecting something else. So the session has to say, we need to delegate to those who are going to be able to implement something that we just don't have capacity to do.
Yeah. Having joint meetings is an excellent way for elders to help and encourage the work of the deacons. And I'm very glad to hear that's what happens in your congregation. That's what we do here in Rockport as well. Usually once a quarter, there's a joint meeting between all of the elders and all of the deacons. And those are joyful meetings too. Mm-hmm. Is that the practice in Glenside? Is that what would happen there?
Yeah. So I would say that Calvary Glenside has really grown in the working of the deacons in session together. In more in recent years, the deacons join us. I believe it's quarterly. They'll join us in praying for the flock. We discuss various needs and matters of common concern and pray for the flock. So we have care teams. And so we have a minister and an elder and a deacon all as a group assigned to the same shepherding group of families. And we will ideally, where it's monthly, that we have a call where we will where that minister and that elder and that deacon meet together. Oftentimes we do it by Zoom, and we will pray through, we will talk about the needs and pray through the needs of the families in that group. And again, a lot of times the needs, oftentimes the spiritual and the physical go together. Those who are going through difficult diaconal circumstances, there's a spiritual component to that. They need extra prayer. They need the ministry of the word in their lives as they go through that. And so, yeah, we've really been blessed to see that enhance our care for the flock as we deliberately. And again, it's not just we do it as a whole session, whole diaconate, but then individually, more specifically and refined onto one list, one shepherding list. That's been helpful for us. And of course, we're a larger congregation now. We're around 300, something like that. So we really have to divide the flock in that way, under the various elders. But that's been a really a great area of growth for us in having the elders and the deacons cooperate in such a intentional and regular way.
I heard about a church that was organizing some, smaller care groups like that. And they started calling them covenant care groups. Mm. Not that the church was called Covenant Church, but that they understood that there was something covenantal in the way that they were organizing themselves to care for the covenant group that yep. they were part of. And I really like that, the title, Covenant Care Groups.
Yeah.
I think it summarizes, and it puts me in mind, it reminds me of some of the approach of Van Damme's book on the deacons, and particularly in that early chapter where he talks about restoring joy.
Mm.
A covenant care group like that is not just taking care of a spiritual aspect, but with that diaconal frame.
Good.
I think that when we think about the ways that elders can help and encourage deacons, one of the primary places that starts is when deacons are being trained, called to the work and trained. What do you think a good training program for deacons looks like, and how do you think elders should be involved in that training program?
Mike, I should I can do a little shout out to an article I think was in the New Horizons in 2013. Nathan Trice did a piece entitled "A Holy Kind of Chaos." In fact, David, I think part of the focus was on the Committee on Diaconal Ministries, the CDM for our denomination, but there's so much overlap on what it actually means to get new deacons ready to understand what is this holy kind of chaos that we're entering into. And again, that was January 2013, just confirmed that here in New Horizons. And I think there are so many great opportunities at the outset in the training stage with new deacons coming on to either establish or either reaffirm that culture of connectedness between session and deacon board. And that certainly is helpful for the new folks coming on, and then that renewed commitment from the session. But, you know, a training certainly needs to focus on the problems, financial problems, vocational problems are often connected with some type of spiritual problem. That it, generally speaking, right, there's other components in that muddy things up sometimes, which actually, as a side note, things are just not black and white in this world of ministry of mercy and service. But hearing from session training, the deacons to understand how to have that relationship together, to be prayerful, to be discreet. I think that's something we haven't really mentioned yet on this edition of the podcast. They're just a good reminders for the officers. And that's hard, right? If you have a good, healthy marriage, you talk to your spouse about everything. So this is a good reminder of being discreet. That's certainly part of the training. And then some of the more specific and tactical ways of maintenance, church property, paying the bills, thinking about budgets. In fact, we're just starting here August 9th, starting the 2024 budget, that really the conversation's going and really making sure the training includes some of the more granular details of running the church.
We probably should tell the listeners at this point, Jeffrey, that you are an economist at heart.
I like to say I want to be like Joseph. He's my goal, right? A godly man, full of the Spirit, and he really knew how to allocate scarce resources, didn't he?
That's a biblical picture. So in training deacons, it's very important that elders are involved. I think you're right, and they can teach the deacons not only diaconal aspects, but spiritual maturity and dealing with people with discretion and spiritual maturity. That's all part of that. What do you think are some of the things that cause that hinder the kind of development of diaconate that we see in Scripture? What kinds of things can hinder that? What kinds of things can get in the way of joyful service? I think obviously the one that you've mentioned already is a lack of communication. But I'm wondering if there are other things that both of you might have any sense of.
Go ahead, David.
So I do think that maybe one way that if I could tie it to how the elders serve the deacons, is to be diligent in raising up more deacons. The raising up of officers is the duty of the session. And I think that a hindrance that comes about is when deacons start to face burnout, when they're overworked and when there's not enough hands to the work. Diaconal work is difficult always. It's on call in a sense. And it requires a lot of compassion, a lot of emotional energy. And so that can, they talk about in disasters, we talk about compassion fatigue. And I think that deacons can, if they are overworked, can suffer that as well. And so I guess I would suggest that a great way that elders can serve deacons is to continue to push forward with the process of raising up future deacons.
Well, that's a good word. I was thinking, hindrances, perhaps, this preoccupation with personal preferences or personal opinions or personal agendas, those are clearly hindrances. So the flip side, of course, is having a true selfless, not thinking more highly of myself than I ought to think, is certainly a reminder.
Do you think that the circumstances in which, the culture, the times in which we're living, do you think that those bring added pressures to deacons? Life is complicated. There are a number of issues that complicate lives for families. I was listening today to a pastor sharing about a lady who works in the medical field, x-raying, and the whole gender fluidity issue suddenly confronted her because, children as young as the age of 10 were being brought in for certain things, and it just became a very ethical issue. And both the deacons and the elders had to help with that woman. And they did. They found some very helpful ways forward. What do you think are the things that are making diaconal work harder today? And how can elders help deacons?
Reminder that we're always countercultural. Whether, 2023 or 1920s, 1820s, 1720s. It does perhaps just the ability that we have to do things today that we didn't have in previous eras certainly adds to the list of things that are complex. But overall, just a reminder, we're countercultural when we think about who we are and what kingdom we're fighting for, and knowing that we know we're on the winning side, but there is another kingdom that's fighting against us.
Yeah. So the even diaconal work is spiritual warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I got to imagine that, we live in a day and age of high debt. And how that permeates even the folks in our congregations and the burden of that. There's lots of confusion about what consists of a family and responding to needs that are outside the congregation or maybe even in our congregations. You're right. All these social confusion starts to permeate even the families of the church, and that and a lot of these is where the rubber hits the road is in the work of the deacons. So I don't know a lot of those. I can't think of specific examples that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I think just to add to that, I think one of the reasons we exist, as our Book of Church Order talks about, seeking to prevent poverty. And it's probably fair to say that a Western society's view of what poverty is in 2023 is very different than in, centuries past. So to add to David, what you just said and credit, that's an interesting one and worth highlighting. But, I think it gets down to when we are with people in need so many times we have to define what in need means. Yeah. because what is a necessity today, perhaps it would be laughed at by our grandparents. So yeah, that's certainly a challenge. What in having the wisdom to know what it means to help and seeking the prevention of poverty today, certainly influenced by the culture around us.
Yeah. So one of the things that elders should seek to do, of course, is to regularly visit the congregation. And we see a lot of discussion amongst elders about ways to do that visitation. But you mentioned earlier about your care groups. So I'm wondering, do you think that elders and deacons should regularly visit members of the congregation? Should they do that together? So is that a, you know, is that a priority? What do you think of that?
I think that that I would say that different congregations, at least in our churches, do it differently. Obviously, the big historic pattern has been for a visitation to be predominantly done by the elders. And sometimes I wonder about whether we should be burdening deacons with the concept of visitation. On the flip side, I've heard good arguments for diaconal visits. And these are probably not so much preventive maintenance, so to speak, type of visits, but these are situations where there's need. And I do think that I'm a big proponent of deacons not just making decisions, meeting with the family at the church building, making decisions there, but the importance and value of meeting with somebody in their home. You know, you could talk to an elderly person who says they're generally doing okay, and you go to their home and find that it's fallen apart, and that there's great need for involvement in matters that they never even thought to ask about. But a deacon's antenna would be up for those things, and they would sense those things, and they can do that when they're in the home. And I would say that a similar argument is for elders making home visits. You know, there's just something so important and valuable about meeting a family, both physically and spiritually, visits in the home. And one of the things that we've begun to do at Calvary, we haven't done it a whole lot, but we are beginning to involve our deacons in home visits as they're able, as they have interest, particularly if there is situations where, well, I would say especially where there's a situation that there is going to be physical needs, material needs, then it makes a lot of sense to do a visit, to have the shepherding elder and the appointed deacon to be present, to be able to begin to address both of those kind of simultaneously.
Well said. I think just to underscore, when you have conversations in homes deeper than the typical question. In fact, we talked about this in last night's deacon meeting. You know, we say to a couple that needs help, and we know they need help, we say, you know, at the church parking lot, it's, hey, how you doing? Great. How are you doing? Yeah, great. Thanks. Well, that doesn't cut it. And so being in the home, it's a lot easier to get a few layers deeper.
Yeah. I think it highlights the importance of elders and deacons working closely together. There really ought to be a very strong bond.
It also, by the way, I should you know, be remiss in not mentioning that, you know, when you visit somebody in their home, or when we're visited in our own homes, it communicates care to such a degree that a meeting in the parking lot, hi, how are you in the park, for elders and deacons and pastors to take the time to come to my home and sit with me in my home, are that ministry of presence in itself communicates that we care, that we're taking time from, you know, all the other things that we have going on to come and spend time with you in your home. So that's just, I think, a huge aspect of the ministry of visitation, which presumes, I guess when I think of visitation, I really do think of predominantly in the home.
One other thing I wanted to ask or really comment on, Van Damme in his book on deacons, which you give free copies at the last national
conference. Yes, we commend that book wholeheartedly.
Yeah, Van Damme comments on prayer is extremely important in all aspects of the diaconal ministry. So my question would be, how do elders help to foster that kind of prayer so that not elders and deacons are not just meeting together, but that there's real prayer going on? What do you have any suggestions or thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, he's taking that straight from the Book of Church Order, the that line about seeking to prevent poverty, referenced that earlier, and the rest of that phrase after seeking to prevent poverty says, making discreet and cheerful distributions to the needy, praying with the distressed, and reminding them of the consolations of Holy Scripture, chapter 25. And a great reminder. I know in my years of deaconing, it's a reminder. We don't often do that. It's so easy to think tactically of, here's a problem, here's a solution, let's implement. When in reality, there's that last phrase of praying and reminding them of the consolations of the Holy Scriptures. That's a huge opportunity we often overlook. But I think perhaps having more deliberate times between the session and the Board of Deacons fosters the right culture. So when you're in those moments of helping the distressed, it really is as natural as anything else. Let's pray about this.
Yeah. I was just going to say that bathing our ministry of mercy in prayer, you know, points to Christ, the true minister of mercy and the source of all compassion and mercy and even care for all of our needs. I think it's sometimes easy to forget to pray. But it's in a sense, not just teachable, but it is teachable in that when we turn to the Lord, particularly in times of need, that it's really acknowledging that He is the source of all the ministry, the compassion and mercy that we need, and He can supply all our needs in Christ. And so that should be at the heart of how elders operate. And deacons just the same.
That's a wonderfully encouraging place to wrap up our discussion. I'm wondering, just before I do that, though, is there anything that we missed? Is there anything that you had wanted to say that you didn't get in?
So we definitely would encourage elders to encourage their deacons to go to attend the National Diaconal Summit that the OPC Committee on Diaconal Ministries hosts every four to five years. We don't have dates for our next summit, but I would guess that it'll be in June 2026. And when those dates come around, be sure to encourage your deacons to attend. There's great networking, great fellowship there. And that just can't be duplicated when listening to podcasts. Plug into the Reformed Deacon podcast, which appears monthly and can be found on any podcast player.
Thank you, David. Thank you very much for joining me on today's podcast.
Oh, it's my privilege to be here. Such a great topic. Thankful for your work. And thank you, Stephen, for your work on this podcast. It's been a blessing to me.
You're welcome. And thank you, Jeffrey.
Well, you are welcome. A privilege to be a part of the podcast today.
And our special thanks to Abby Harding for all the technical work she does on these podcasts. Lord willing, the next podcast will be interviewing Chad Van Dixhorn on ruling elders and the Westminster Standards.